Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So how has your week been, Jimmy? How was your weekend? All that good stuff.
My week? That's a good question. I'm drawing a blank. Oh, I went to a Power Ranger convention this past weekend in San Antonio. That was a lot of fun. Got to meet some of the newer Power Rangers from the newer season. So that's always a great thing. I bought some figures, spent a little money, so keep the economy going. But other than that, I've had a pretty chill week. What about you? What have you been up to?
Not much. Got dinner with friends over the weekend, which is always fun. I had a friend who was in town who hasn't been around for a while, or hasn't been in town for a while since I haven't seen him. He lives in another city. Actually, our friend Mark, who has been on the podcast twice, he was in town, so we got dinner and stuff, so that was fun. I didn't plan much for the weekend because we were supposed to have this atmospheric river or whatever they're calling for San Francisco, so I was already like prepared. Okay, well, this is going to be an at-home weekend because the last time we had one of those atmospheric river type things, it was just like torrential downpour for a week or whatever. So I'm just like, all right, I'm staying home this weekend. And then it just like barely sprinkled, or at least where I was. So I did a few things. Like I went to the Golden Gate Park and I went and watched Scream 6. But beyond that, not too much.
Scream 6, man, I've only seen it once. I don't know if we talked about this on last podcast, but I'm a big Scream fan. I know you're a Scream fan. Mm-hmm. Do you think you're going to see it again? I don't know. Did you watch it in 3D? I didn't ask that.
I did not watch it in 3D.
So, okay. I hear that it's not worth watching in 3D, which I figure watching it already. But I kind of do want to watch it in 3D because I feel like this is going to be the only Scream movie that's ever going to be released in 3D.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was just like there's only a handful of movies that are improved by 3D in my mind. And I feel like this wouldn't have been one of them.
Oh, definitely not. I think there's one scene, maybe two scenes that I'm like, would be good in 3D. They both have people on like a second story kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. But other than that, I feel like it wouldn't look as good. Because I didn't notice any gimmicky stuff, like where knives come to the screen or whatnot. I don't know if you ever seen a Friday the 13th in 3D or Friday the 13th 3D or whatever. But they really do 3D stuff. Like there's a character that yo-yos. So he yo-yos into the camera. And there's a juggler person and they juggle into the camera. Like, they do things purposely so that there will be 3D stuff to look at.
Yeah, I mean, like, sometimes it's not bad. They'll have 3D stuff, but it just doesn't, like, I guess in my mood, it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't really improve the actual film. You know, like, oh, he is, look at how awesome he is, or whatever. Oh, look, he's done I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's never, it doesn't ever really enhance the film, if you will. Like, yeah. There's a few films where it does. Like, I would say like the first Doctor Strange, for example. Absolutely, that would benefit from it. Like, because of all the you know, 3D worlds and all the weird alternate universes he goes to and stuff when she does the whole, you know, touching him on third eye and sending him, like, that's good. Or even, like, this most recent Ant-Man would have been a great one. Or Avatar. But, you know, it's just like, oh, look, they jumped over a car and it looks really cool. Or just, like, gimmicky like that. It's just like, it doesn't really enhance the movie.
Yeah. I think animated movies do better in 3D as well. Just because of the nature of it. You know, you can animate that a little better because most 3D is just rendered over. So man, maybe Spider-Man No Way Home would have been fun in 3D.
There are definitely scenes that I think would have been improved by 3D or would have been interesting by 3D. Spider-Man I do think would be good just because of the whole dynamic of him swinging through the city and stuff. That would be pretty cool in 3D.
I mean, don't know. Would you go see if they were like the Banshees of Inisher is re-released in 3D? Are you going to go out and see it?
No, that is not going to be a compelling event for me to want to go see it in 3D. That would be funny, though, if they just released movies that have no business being in 3D. Like, oh, we're releasing Tar in 3D.
You're going to go to the theater next, and it's going to be like, Oppenheimer, now in 3D.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you? Well, no, I mean, if there are scenes in it that are that could be benefited by 3D, then sure. But beyond that, no. I mean, I'm trying to think of like all of, you know, now that I think about it, a lot of Christopher Nolan's films, not all of them, but a lot of them actually would benefit from 3D.
I mean, Inception for sure.
Inception. I'd say not the first Batman that he did, but The Dark Knight. There were definitely a lot of scenes, especially the Hong Kong scene, which would have been great in 3D. Batman Begins might have had a few scenes. Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, maybe. Tenet, I don't think needed 3D. Dunkirk would have been fine with 3D.
Oh, I'm definitely watching Memento in 3D.
Yeah, so he does a lot of movies that I think would actually be cool in 3D. Well, maybe like half. Maybe half of his films would be great in 3D.
Man, I did not know he directed The Prestige. Man. Nolan's got a really good track record now that I'm looking at all his movies.
Interstellar, that would have been great in 3D. Yeah, he does. I think it's because he's very, like, granted, he's very artsy, I guess you could say. Like, I don't know if that's the right word I want to use, but, like, he's not a Michael Bay where he's just like, I'm going to make a movie with a bunch of explosions and action and, you know, who cares if the plot makes sense or is good or whatever, or if the acting is good. Whereas I think Christopher Nolan puts a lot of thought into the movies that he makes and has like a message or an idea or some kind of sentiment he wants to get across. And he goes really deep. And that's why, like, when you even look at his body of work, he's only directed, you know, a handful of films. He hasn't directed a ton.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the way to go, though. Like, if you don't think you're going to, like, you shouldn't just direct anything. You know, your body, like, Nolan's got a great body of work. I mean, wow. I'm shocked. I might be a Nolan fan now.
Yeah, if you look at Oppenheimer, that's going to be his 12th film that he directed.
I mean, Tenet was okay. I'm just going to say, like, I didn't hate the movie. Dunkirk, I love, though. I love Dunkirk. And Inception's great. I'm not a big, like, into Interstellar as a lot of people are. I think it's just okay. But I know a lot of people love that movie.
I loved Interstellar. I loved that one. That was one of my favorites. I liked Inception. The thing that I hated about Inception, and it's not even really Inception's fault, to be honest, but like, Inception changed movie trailers. Like, from like, if you look at Inception, or if you look at Inception, so there's like movie trailers pre-Inception and post-Inception. And Inception definitely changed movie trailers to where everybody has to have that big wah noise in their theater or in their trailer.
Man. Oh.
Like, that's the only thing that upset me about Inception. But it was a good movie. I liked Tenet, but it was definitely one of those movies you have to watch like two or three times in order to fully get. Which was kind of a distraction, I guess you could say.
Man, I love Memento a lot. As a, like, growing up, that was one of my favorite movies. But I also love The Prestige a lot too.
Prestige. Well, I mean, you know, even those early ones, Memento and Prestige, were like classics and amazing.
Man, I haven't seen Insomnia in a long time, so I don't even. But that's one of Robin Williams' like more dramatic roles, so that's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, maybe our next podcast should be Christopher Nolan movies.
Yep, we can. Well, we'd have 12 episodes, so it'd be a quick series. But yeah, that wouldn't be a bad one, though. I wouldn't mind doing it. I do think I'm looking forward to seeing Oppenheimer. I don't know. I guess it depends on how you want to choose it, because technically, Dunkirk was a historical film, whereas Oppenheimer is more of a biopic. And I'm looking at his body of work. I don't think he's done that before.
No, this will be his first.
It's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Yeah, because Dunkirk, he has more freedom to tell a story, like his own story, and kind of mold it his own way. But Oppenheimer is you could like play with the facts a little bit, but you got to hit certain beats for sure.
I think, what was the joke? So, you know, because he has to show up in every one of his films, you know that Michael Caine's going to probably show up at one point. It's like, oh, he cast Michael Caine to play the plutonium atom.
Oh, I don't see Michael Caine on this list, but do you know who I do see on this list? Josh Peck from Drake and Josh.
What the? Okay. Oh, David Dastmalchian, he's finally not playing a Marvel or DC character.
Yeah, sure. So Rami Malek's in this movie. Matt Damon. Jack Quaid. That's a little interesting. Gary Oldman. This is a good cast. I feel like I haven't.
Gary Oldman's definitely one of those guys who's good in like 90% of the films that he's in.
Sometimes I don't even recognize him. That's how good he is.
Josh Hartnett. Now that's a name I haven't heard in forever. Didn't he just like vanish off the face of the earth for a few years?
Josh Hartnett isn't one of my like, I don't know, guilty pleasure horror movies. I don't know. Do you think you can name what it is? Oh wait, he's in two actually. Nah, that's not really. I think even guiltier of a pleasure.
I can't. Oh, no idea. That's only one I really know him from. I know he was in Hollywood Homicide, but I wouldn't really call that a horror film.
The Faculty.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh man, it's like where aliens take over a high school and these kids have detention or whatever. It was so cheesy back in the day. That, and he's in Halloween H2O. So,
yeah, it looks like that was his breakout role.
Halloween H2O.
According to this, I mean, that's the first film he's listed in beings, and so.
Oh, interesting. Because I always think of, I don't think of his, maybe it's not his breakout role, but when I think of him, I always think of Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah, he was in that. I Pearl Harbor just doesn't even exist in my mind anymore, so. Like, I don't even remember. You mentioning it right now is the first time I've thought of Pearl Harbor in probably decades.
I think about it a lot. Not a lot, actually. I mean, when I do think about it, I think about how it was two DVDs long. Back when DVDs first came out. Like, you had to stop and then switch the disc.
Reminds me of old PlayStation days. Like, you know, when you had a long game that had three or four discs, like Final Fantasy IX or something like that, and you'd have to switch halfway through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you knew it was a good game if that was like if it had more than one disc.
Yeah. I want to see Josh Hartnett play Hank Hill in a film. That'd be fun.
Is it in 3D?
Sure, why not? Nice. King of Hill live action King of the Hill remake. Get on it, Mike Judge. That'll be Christopher Nolan's next film. After Oppenheimer, he'll make the live action King of the Hill.
Is this a darker, more gritty King of the Hill?
Oh, you know it will be.
Oh my gosh, now I can't remember her name. Oh, Nancy. I feel like Kirsten Dunst is going to be Nancy or something like that.
Mm-hmm. We should, that would be a pretty interesting thing. Or if we've just went through like all of Christopher Nolan's like normal people he hires, it'd be like, I don't know, Christian Bale would put on weight and play Bill. Michael Caine would be Cotton probably.
But they Michael do, like, Caine wouldn't be Bobby.
No. Bobby would be like Dane DeHaan or something like that.
Oh, man. Cillian Murphy's got to be in here somewhere. Maybe he'll be Boomhauer.
Cillian Murphy's Boomhauer. Yes, I like that. Well, let's see. Let's jump right into this episode then. Maybe they'll do a live adaptation of this episode, Peggy the Boggle Champ. This is episode 53 for us. Season 1, episode 9. We're getting to the end here. I think we only have one more episode that we're reviewing after this, and then we're going to have like a closer episode after that. So two episodes coming up after this. So, you know, thank you for sticking with us. And we're in the first season, which is always one of the best ones, as I always say. This one is a Peggy heavy episode, as you can guess from the title. It starts out at the Hill House, and Peggy and Nancy and Min are playing Boggle. This is Min's first time playing Boggle. Keep in mind, Min only joined the season, or the show really, maybe 3 episodes prior, so we're still kind of getting to know her and everybody like that. And so Peggy's like, oh yeah, this is a popular game, and you know, you just got to find the words and stuff. And so they put it down, and Min's like, ah, ba mi tam yum. And then Nancy's like, oh, you have to use real words. She's like, yeah, ba mi tam yum, Thai spicy noodle soup. It's really tasty. And then the guys are all in the living room watching TV, and Dale's like, oh, it's such a nice day outside. Nancy shouldn't be cooped up indoors all day. She should be out there hanging my laundry. And then, of course, on TV, they hear that stereotypical, like, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday announcement. But it's funny because it's like, Sunday, 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 and Saturday. The Dallas Mower Expo, where you can see the mulchinator and try out the latest models. And then, like, they have a random drop in there where they're like, 10,000 oil paintings that must be sold, which, like, has nothing to do with it. But, okay, whatever. And all the guys are like enamored by this. They're like, a mower show? Oh, we got to go. And then we see Peggy looking through a dictionary, and she's like, oh, pad thai doesn't count. You lose, Min. Which I don't know. I feel like, granted, this is like the early 90s or mid late 90s, but I still feel like the dictionary would have had it by then, but maybe not. Luann's like, oh, Aunt Peggy, you're so smart. The words I don't know could fill a dictionary. And then Nancy's like, you know, the Elks are doing a charity boggle to raise bail money for their treasurer. You should go and play. And Peggy's like, oh, you know, I just play for fun. It's, you know, nothing competition. Okay, you owe me $13, Min. And then Min's like, oh, thank you for teaching me boggle, Peggy Hill. Maybe next time you come over to my place so we play Mahjong. Bring your checkbook. Peggy goes up to see Hank. It's like, hey, Hank, I think I'm going to go play Boggle with the Elks. And they're like, what? The Elks? Man, they'll do anything for money. Do they still play that game where they have a cow poop into a square? And he's like, oh, but Boggle's not like cow bingo. Boggle's a game of skill. Cow bingo is a game of strategy.
Is that a real thing?
Maybe. So in Austin, I don't know if they still do it. Like, it might have gone away as a result of COVID. What's it called? COVID. But in Austin, they had Chicken S Bingo. This is a family-friendly show. But they had Chicken S Bingo, which was essentially that where I can't remember if it was, like, based on where the chicken pooped or, like, where it dropped the ball or whatever. But essentially, the chicken would, like, that's how they would fill the bingo card, is wherever the chicken made its mess. Like, instead of, you know, pulling out the balls from, like, the pop ball, the little barrel that spins, they just, you know, if the chicken poops on B28, then they call out B28.
Man, do chickens poop a lot? Like, or do you have multiple chickens?
I don't know. Like, I only know a little bit about it. I've never actually been to one of them, but I've heard them talk about it, like, on the radio in Austin and stuff. And, yeah, I don't know if, like, COVID got rid of it because of all that. But I don't know. It might still be a thing.
Ooh, interesting. I might have to check this out.
Yeah, it's been going on for, like, 20 years, so I'm guessing it's, like, the same thing. At the Elks Lodge, they're playing Boggle, and Hank all of a sudden shows up. He's like, all right, I replaced my watch battery, ate a Cinnabon, and bought a P-trap. I can't kill any more time. Let's go. And Peggy's like, oh, you're being impatient. It's only round 5. And Hank sits down and just kind of waits, but he's, like, not happy about it because he's bored. And Peggy is like, oh, yeah, she's really just showing off. She's like, I hope you don't mind. I only use words that appear in Patsy Cline lyrics, and, you know, she's doing really well. And they're like, Bill's like, oh, I guess that's why they call her your better half. And Hank's like, who calls her that? And then there's like a little kid who has a broken leg, and it's like, oh, would you like me to find your name in the Boggle game? And it's like, sure. And he does, or she does find it. So it's like, okay, cool.
Isn't it a really long name?
Yeah, it was. I should have wrote it down. It was Zachary something or another. But she does find it, and she wins the trophy, and she brings it home, and, you know, she's like, hey, Hank, you got a clean room on the trophy shelf? And, you know, he's all worried because she's putting the trophy up there. He's like, be careful. You don't want to knock mine over. And Bobby's like, huh, Mom's trophy's bigger than yours, Dad. And Peggy's like, you know what? I think I'm going to go to the state Boggle championship in Dallas. And Hank doesn't like the idea of her going to Dallas. And it's like, oh, I won't be going alone. You'll be my coach. You'll be there. And he's still not, like, he's just really not into it. Like, he sees Boggle as a game. He doesn't see it as being all that important. Even when they say, like, oh, I'm going to state just like you did, Hank. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's exactly the same. You know, he's kind of belittling her in a way. Either way, you know, after she mentions that, oh, it's in Dallas and it's, you know, we'll be back by Sunday. He's like, Sunday? And then he's like, he realizes, oh, that's when the Mower Expo is going to be. So he goes outside and he's like, hey, guess who's going to the Mower Expo? And if you guess right, you can come with me, which is kind of, he broke the guessing game because he pretty much gave it away with that statement. But they guess Hank and all the guys are going and they're all excited and stuff. And the next day, Hank is honking on the horn, and it's like 4 a.m, but he's like, come on, we got to get up and get to Dallas before the gangs wake up. And Peggy's like, oh, it's 4 a.m. You're being ridiculous. And, you know, as she gets ready to leave and they're leaving Bobby and Luann alone, she's like, okay, well, you know, no parties this weekend. It's like, yeah, okay. Nancy comes out and so does Min, and they're like, on behalf of the Arlen Boggle boosters, we are honoring you with this jacket that has like all the, it's almost like a NASCAR jacket or something. And it has patches from all the local businesses and stuff. And then Min says, good luck, Peggy Hill, or goodbye. You know, where I come from, either you come home a winner or not at all. So as you could probably tell, like a big part of the conflict is, what's the word I'm looking for? Peggy and it's Peggy and Hank. Like, Hank doesn't take the Boggle as seriously as Peggy does. He just thinks it's like a dumb game or whatever. And yeah, I like that Peggy likes to do it, but it's not my thing and it's a waste of my time and blah, blah, blah. Whereas Peggy, like, you know, it's a hobby, but it's a hobby she's passionate about.
I do love the jacket they give her. I like all the sponsors from Arlen. It's really cool. Like, it's cool, but then, I mean, surprise, but like, we never see, there's a little mention of Peggy and Boggle later on in the series, but not as prolific as it is this episode.
Yeah, as like, Boggle shows up a lot in the season, or in the series, but as like the episodes go and the seasons go, it's almost never mentioned. In fact, I think towards the later seasons, it's not mentioned at all that she liked Boggle.
I mean, okay, I know I'm like talking about a different episode, but anytime we talk about Boggle and Peggy Hill, I always remember like there's some party going on and something's happening, and she's like, let's play a board game. Boggle's usually not played with this many people, but we'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, we did that episode.
Yeah, is it the one where she tries to die in their house?
No, that's the one. I mean, it's a Christmas episode. It's the one where Bill becomes Lenore.
Lenore? Oh, okay. Ah, yes. Ah, I always love that. I love that Peggy's actually really good at Boggle. Like, you know, sometimes she's like, I'm really good at this, and she's not that good at it. But this, she's genuinely, like, really good at.
Yeah, this is like an actual skill that she has and is not like just overinflating or anything. after the break, we see Hank is entering Dallas, and you know, he rolls up the windows because he's like, "Ah, Dallas, it's a crazy place, and it's terrible, and it's a stereotypical small town guy goes to a big city, assumes he's going to be robbed the second he steps in." We then see back at the Hill House. We hear I'm just drawing a blank on the song. Old Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger. If I got that wrong, I'm sorry. But we hear that, you know, the stereotypical risky business type scene. We see Bobby's kind of slide into the kitchen in his underwear. But then it kind of subverts expectation as he walks to the TV. And he's like, "Luann, what are you watching? Risky Business." And he's like, "I can't watch that. That has adult situations." Like, "Oh, not this one. It's the edited one from the video store. And I also got a Chuck Mangione fire safety video. Want to watch it with me?" He's like, "Nah, I got to go do my laundry." It's like, "Well, remember, Chuck Mangione says to always unplug the iron after use." Back in Dallas, we're at the hotel, and you know, they pull in, and the valet shows up, and Hank's a little nervous, but Peggy's like, "Oh, come on, the valet is part of the hotel room." And it's like, "I don't know, this guy looks like he's begging to take a joyride in my truck." Peggy walks in, and she is introduced as the Boggle champion of Ireland, and they meet Joan with the Boggle hospitality team, and you know, it's like, "Oh, welcome, here's your shirt, your tote bag, and your Boggle lay," and they give her like the lay on, but it's instead of flowers, it's made out of like giant Boggle pieces. You know, Peggy introduces her husband. It's like, "Oh, this is Hank." It's like, "Oh, we've got plenty of activities for spouses. You want to make your own wallet?" It's like, "Oh, no, thanks. Harley Davidson already made a wallet for me." And it's like, "Oh, actually, he's my coach." And so Joan's like, "Oh, okay, well, here you go." And gives her a pink coach shirt and says, "Coaches must go into, you know, the, I guess, the like a another room where there's a closed circuit television." Back at the Hill House, Bobby is watching the Chuck Mangione fire safety video, and he reminds them to take off the unplugged iron. Bobby looks over and realizes the iron's unplugged, so he's like, "Good, I did a great job." And then he's drinking water. Luann comes in and is like, "Bobby, what are you doing? Use a coaster." And as soon as he lifts it, you see the water stain on the table, and they're freaking out like, "Your dad's going to kill us." And it's like, and then Bobby's like, "We got to think of something. Luann, you think of something." I find it funny because this is going to be like the B plot or the C plot of the show. Or this episode is like them constantly making like minor problems, but blowing them out of proportion, which I don't know. It makes me wonder like how Hank reacts to things with like what we don't see in the show. If they're really that upset about having left the water stain.
I believe that if Hank and Peggy were there, Bobby wouldn't have used a coaster anyway. You know, like, I feel like it's probably something that would happen if they were there or they weren't there. It's just the added pressure of, like, they're in charge, you know, and trying to prove that they can, like, not make a mistake. The pressure's getting to them.
Yeah, maybe. That's actually a very good point. Like, maybe because they're being left alone and stuff, they're worried that when Hank and Peggy come back, they'll think that they're irresponsible or whatever. Back at the hotel, Hank is getting ready to check into the room, and he, you know, he tells the concierge, or, you know, Hank Hill, and they're like, "We don't have a Hank Hill. I've got a Peggy Hill." "Oh, that's it. Yeah, Peggy and Hank Hill." "No, we've got a Peggy Hill. I'm her husband." "Okay, Mr. and Mrs. Peggy Hill." And Hank's like really upset. He's hitting the ground, but he's hitting the desk. But as he hits it, like the bell rings, and he's like, I didn't marry her. She married me. Listen to me. It's Hank Hill, Mr. and Mrs. Hank Hill." But as he's hitting the table, the bell rings. And so like a different bellhop comes behind him. And by the end, there's like 10 bells behind him. He turns around. He's like, "What are you all looking at?" Then we meet Peggy's arch rival, I guess. Granted, you know, she's only an arch rival for this episode. We never see her again or before. Her name's Sissy Cobb. She's won 7 non-consecutive years. And she's like, I guess, a debutante. She's like super fancy and rich and everything. And Peggy introduces herself, and she acts incredibly snobby to Peggy and calls her patches, insulting her jacket that she got from the Boggle Boosters Club, and says, "Oh, you're a real rags to riches story." And she is not a likable person at all, and really getting into Peggy's head. Back at the Hill home, they are working hard to varnish out the stain on the table. And it's funny because Luann's freaking out, like, "Hurry up, Bobby. They only have 47 hours until your parents get home." And so Bobby works faster and faster, and he accidentally knocks the can of varnish onto the floor, but nothing falls out. Luann goes and picks up the can, and then like one little drop falls onto the carpet, and they start freaking out even more. At the hotel, Hank is walking around. He has Mr. Peggy Hill on his shirt, and he runs into Sissy Cobb's husband. He's like, "Oh, hi, Peggy Hill." He's like, "Oh, that's my name." He's like, "Oh, you don't have to explain anything. I have an uncle named Leslie." And even the Duke, John Wayne's real name is Marion. And Hank's like, "Take that back." Which, in real life, John Wayne's real name was Marion. Back at the Hill home, they're vacuuming. They're trying to vacuum the stain out, which was a fool's errand to begin with, because you can't, like, maybe in today's technology you can, but back then, you couldn't vacuum a stain out, right? You'd have to use, like, an upholstery cleaner or something, but they're trying to vacuum the stain out. He puts it on high power, and he winds up short-circuiting the socket. So they're just not having a lot of good luck trying to fix these minor problems.
Oh, I was like, not now in my life, now that I'm an adult, but, like, back then as a kid, I definitely was someone who was like, to fix one problem, I start like two new problems, you know, like just trying to like cover up something. I end up making a bigger mess, and then it's like a bigger mess. And you're just like, if I would have just accepted the fate at the beginning, this would have been fine.
Yeah, probably. I think, I mean, yeah, so that's a good point. I'm trying to think what I would have done in that situation. I honestly probably wouldn't have, I mean, I know it sounds weird. I, like, honestly wouldn't have cared that I didn't use a coaster and left the water stain if I was 13 years old.
I would probably just wait to see what happened. Like, is it going to evaporate on its own? Or is it, like, doesn't it take a while? I don't know. I don't think I've ever left a water stain. But does it take a while for, like, the cup to be there for a long time?
I think it has to be there, and I think it has to be multiple times. Like, I'm not an expert by any means, but I don't think one time leaving a water thing on there is going to permanently stain a table. But yeah. And then of course we have the whole story going on with Peggy and Hank. And now we're seeing how, like, I think the problem is, so this is my take. I think what's upsetting Hank is not only that it's not something he doesn't care for, because he's very indifferent to Boggle in general, but I think he hates the fact that he is kind of second to Peggy in this situation. Like, you know, first of all, the name being under Peggy Hill, and them calling him, oh, Mr. and Mrs. Peggy Hill. And then, you know, he being her coach and being called Mr. Peggy Hill and all that stuff. I think that's what's really getting to him, is that he's kind of subsidiary or subservient, whatever term you want to use. He's secondary to Peggy. Like, I think in his traditional mindset, like, he's the head of the household or he's in charge, and then Peggy's like the second in command. And in this instance, it's the other way around.
Yeah, I do feel like, Hank's very traditional in a lot of senses. And yeah, you're right. This is like, you, when he was checking in the reservation, you know, it was for, even though it does make sense that it would be under Peggy's name, because she is the competitor.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like season one stuff, like, opposed to, like, newer season stuff. I'll pose it. Like, in newer season stuff, when Bobby's into something that Hank's not into, Hank gets too into it and too competitive. You think this is just because it's not Bobby and it's Peggy, that he isn't, like, over-coaching her or, like, trying to figure out the strategy? Because Hank is naturally a very competitive person.
I think it's because it's something he's not good at. Like, I think Hank is definitely, like, good with his hands and stuff. I don't think he would be, we've never really seen it. I don't think, like, Boggle is something that he can dominate in. Like, even if he put his mind to it, he would probably struggle to dominate in it. And I also think he just doesn't care about stuff like that, too. So it's probably both. I think just this whole him being here, him being seen as secondary to Peggy and everything, like, this whole situation is upsetting him.
Yeah, but I mean, also, like, he's not really there for Boggle.
No, of course not. He's not there for Boggle. He wants to go to the show, and, this gave him the perfect excuse to go. He's like, yeah, he could just say, oh, I'm going to help Peggy out or whatever, and then just, like, bounce whenever she's not paying attention. Speaking of which, in the next episode, or not next episode, the next day, we're at the hotel, and we're in the tournament room where the Boggle tournament's taking place, and Hank's like, oh, you know, I'm gonna head over to the mower show, and Peggy's like, well, no, I need you to stay here and be my coach and everything, and Peggy talked about this vision she has of, you know, her winning and being up there in the winner's circle with that big old trophy, and Hank being there right with her, and them celebrating, and Hank's like, well, I see myself in the mower show, and you're there like a beauty queen of yore wearing fur coat, and oh, I'll stay. So Hank stays. He goes into the viewing room because they're not allowed on the actual floor. You have to watch from closed circuit. We also see on the side that the guys were driving up to Dallas, so at some point he's going to meet up with the guys. For the first round, Peggy plays against Sissy Cobb, who, it's a subtle thing, you might not notice at first, but she has her own chair. Like, everybody else in the show, or in the contest, rather, has, like, the standard hotel chair or whatever. She has, like, an executive chair. So it's like, did she bring her own chair? Did she pay to have her own chair? Is that how fancy she is? But, yeah, Peggy plays against Sissy, and that really psychs her out. We see back in the coach's lounge, Sissy Cobb's husband is, like, I guess, taking notes, like, yeah, it's a good day for sometimes why, and Hank's not even paying attention. He's like, hey, look, for $10, I can ride the mower that mowed the grassy knoll, and the guy doesn't care either because he's more involved here. At the end, Sissy scores with 73 points, and Peggy, the only word she gets out is dang, which isn't a word, so she scores zero. Back in the hotel room, Peggy she's crying. She thinks she's an idiot, and Hank's trying to make her feel better by saying, like, well, you're smarter than me, and she's like, oh, la-di-da, and it's like, well, you're the smartest person in Arlen. It's like, oh, great, I'm the smartest person in Pigville. And Hank's like, look, I'm trying here. Here, I'll give you the pep talk our coach always gave us. It's like, you're a loser. You're a loser. Why are you crying? Yeah, why are you crying at me? Are you going to cry, be a baby? And Peggy's like, why are you yelling at me? And Hank's like, I don't know. Coach did this to us, and it works. Like, no, it didn't. You guys lost state. And Hank's like, I'm just trying to help. And Peggy's like, well, you made me feel worse. And Hank's like, oh, I need an $8 beer, which definitely shows the dates or how dated this is, because an $8 beer out of a mini bar is actually a good deal in 2023.
Man, I don't think I've stayed. Well, no, I'm trying to think. I don't think I've stayed at a hotel that's had a mini bar.
I have a few times, and I've never ordered anything from it for the obvious reason that, like, unless there's, like, nothing nearby or whatever, like, I can go to the 7-Eleven and get a Coke for much cheaper than what will be in the mini bar. Yeah, I guess it's convenient, but I'm not so lazy that I'm gonna just be like, you know what, I don't want to go across the street to a 7-Eleven or five blocks away to a 7-Eleven. I'm just gonna pay $15 for a Coca-Cola. It's not really that much, but it's definitely way more than what you would pay at, like, a gas station.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I question Hank. Like, did he really think that pep talk was going to work?
I think he might have, to be honest, just because of who Hank is. Like, Hank kind of thinks, Hank thinks in terms, like, everything is in terms of sports to him. Like, he bases everything on, not everything, but most things he relates back to sports. Sports is a huge part of his life and stuff. So he probably thinks, like, oh, since that was a good motivational speech from our coach, surely that's going to be a good motivational speech for Peggy.
But you just made me feel worse.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I do think Hank was trying to help, but he just didn't know how to help. So he was just doing the best he could. It's like, he's like, oh, you're smarter than me. Well, you're smarter than everyone in Arlen. Well, here's this pep talk my coach will do. And, you know, I do think he's legitimately trying, but he's just not able to do it. Mm. After the break, Peggy's feeling bad the next day. And she's like, oh, I ranked 255 out of 256. And Hank's like, well, you're better than the boggle playing chicken.
Yeah.
And so, which I guess is something. At least you're not last place. But, you know, the game's getting ready to start. And coaches have to go to the coaches area. So Peggy leaves to go to the room. And Hank walks through the lobby and runs into the guys, Dale, Bill, Boomhauer, and the guys are like, oh, Hank, why do you have a purse? And he's like, oh, it's Peggy's. Like, sorry, I'm going to go to the mower show. And Hank's like, oh, no, I got to support Peggy. And Boomhauer makes the whipping noise. And Hank takes offense to that. Dale's like, I don't know who you are. I mean, you were just a few days ago, you were like a little boy excited to see the mowers. And now you're some kind of man. What are you, Hank? Are you a little boy or are you a man? And Hank's like, no, I'm still a little boy. Come on, let's go head over to the mower show. During the contest, we see that Peggy beats the chicken. And she's slowly beating everybody, winning left and right and heading up to the finals. But Hank's not there because Hank is at the mower show and he sees Liberace's mower and it says no flash photography. And it's kind of funny because I guess it's a mower with a bunch of diamonds on it. And, you know, obviously Dale takes a picture and if the flash reflects and blinds everybody temporarily, Hank sees a kid with I forget what the toy is called, but it's like on a stick with a dome at the end and wheels and you push it and like the little balls pop up and everything. It's like a very old toy, but it reminds him of a boggle game. And so that's like his guilt coming out. And then they also see the mower of the future, which is like this VR thing. And Hank sees the sand going down from the mulch machine. And now he's seeing it as like the sand in an hourglass for Boggle. And now he's just really having guilt. And he's like, he's realizing that he shouldn't be here. And it's starting to show a little bit because Peggy, as she's winning more and more, you know, she's getting ready for the finals. And she says to the camera, I'm going to the finals, Hank. But you see the chair that says Mr. Peggy Hill is empty. Finally, at the Moore show, we see Hank is, you know, hanging out with Boomhauer. He's doing this VR mower thing, which I guess is something you want to do. I don't know. I guess somebody's into it, whatever. And Bill is like, oh, I haven't had fun like this since our old football road trips, man. That was the last fun time we've ever had. Remember when we went to state and Peggy was there? And, you know, even though we were losing, she was cheering her heart out. And Hank kind of, you know, has an aha moment and realizes where he should be. And he bounces and leaves. Oh, and I should also mention, we see back at the house that Bobby and Luann have hired a bunch of contractors to fix everything.
Hmm. I love that Bobby's so invested into the house. I think he says, like, what is it? I spent the last of my money on the deodorizing guy. And we have people sanding the coffee table and there's things. And I know this part is funny to me, but there's a guy walking with a bucket of paint. And Bobby's like, is that eggshell white? Because it has to be Swiss cream.
I mean, I appreciate the length that they're going to try to make this better, but I honestly think had they just left a little droplet on the thick carpet, they would have been fine.
True, but I do appreciate that Bobby, like, because I remember there's, like, throw into another episode, but isn't there another episode where Hank's like, Peggy, you can pick any shade of white that you want?
Yes, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, so I appreciate that Bobby also understands that this isn't just any white, it's Swiss cream white. Which sounds too fancy for Hank, actually.
It does. Maybe that was Peggy's choice. Hmm. So we are at the finals. Hank is not there. This in the finals, apparently your coach is actually allowed to be there in the room with you, kind of sitting behind you. So, you know, Sissy Cobb is who Peggy's going up against, and her husband's around, but Hank is not. And so Peggy is like, oh, come on, Hank, where are you? Where are you? But then, you know, they're not waiting. The tournament's not going to wait. They're just going to go. So guy comes out, it's like, no foreign words or objects, best out of three, go. And Sissy Cobb is doing well. And Peggy is like, her headspace is just not there because, you know, where's Hank? Hank's abandoned me. She's trying to, she is starting to write and stuff, and she breaks her pencil, but because she doesn't have a coach to give her a new pencil, she just chews the pencil to sharpen it again. They're like, oh, pencil's down. And then they read off their words, and it's funny because it's funny, but in a sad way, because Peggy's like reflecting on her emotions now, because she's like, her words are all sad, abandoned, bad, man, stuff like that. We see outside that Hank is just barreling through, and he parks his car right outside of the hotel and tosses the key to the valet. So it shows how important this is to him, to where now he just doesn't even care who drives his truck. Peggy is inside and she breaks her pencil again, and that's her last pencil. And she's just like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, but Hank shows up in time and gives her another pencil, and it's like, hey, where have you been? And Hank's like, doesn't matter where I've been. I figured out where I should be. This gives Peggy brand new confidence to play the game. Time's up. Sissy Cobb goes and gives off her word. It's all like fancy words like caviar and harpsichord and stuff like that. Instead, Peggy uses a bunch of small words to narrow the gap. There's only one word left on her list, and she needs 10 points to win. And so Sissy Cobb goes and looks, and she's like, oh, it's ain't. Ain't isn't a word. I win. And Peggy's like, no, it's acquaintanceship. Like, it was not my pleasure to make your acquaintanceship. I win. And then Peggy wins, and they go to the winner's circle, and we see Sissy Cobb, and Sissy Cobb's husband's given her the same speech Hank gave. Peggy's like, loser, loser, why are you crying? Hank is like, you know, Peggy, Coach said he would do something to us if we ever won state. And he goes and kisses Peggy, and the episode ends, but we get kind of a post-credit scene where these contractors are still at the house, like, wrapping up, but then Peggy and Hank show up, and they think that a party is happening, and so they, like, yell at them to leave and everything, and say they're going to punish Bobby and Luann, so it's kind of funny.
Oh, man. Well, this is definitely one of my favorite episodes. At the end, though, I love because Peggy's sharpening the pencil with her teeth, and then Hank comes back and, like, she's broken the pencil. I love when she smiles at Hank. You can see all, like, her blacked out teeth because of her sharpening the pencil with her teeth.
Yep.
I love that. Anytime I think of this episode, I always think of the words that Sissy Cobb writes at the end. What is it? Like, it's harpsichord, chinchilla, and gosh, what was the other one?
I know caviar was on caviar. There. There's a lot of big words, but like no, fancy words.
No, because she only writes three words because she thinks she's got it.
That's true.
Because the commentator's like, she wrote harpsichord, but not harp or chord. So I always think of that. I don't know. I love the comeback of this episode. This is a great Hank coming around and realizing what's important kind of episode.
I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of wish he was there from the get-go, but it is good that he did come around and realize where he needed to be. Like, that's, I think, the ultimate memo here, or the message or whatever, is that he realizes where he's supposed to be. And I think what it was, I mean, at first we start to see that the guilt is eating at him because, like, everywhere he looks, he sees Boggle. So he knows already where he's supposed to be, that he needs to be with Peggy and not here at the mower show. But then, like, when Bill makes that comment about, oh, you remember Peggy was cheering her heart out even when we were losing and stuff, Hank's like, that's when Hank realized, like, oh yeah, I'm the bad guy here. Like, Peggy was cheering her heart out when it was my turn to be in a state, and I'm here at a mower show when she's at state. I know where I need to be.
Yep, right by her side. And it is kind of sad that he didn't know that she made it to the championship. But how quickly everything must have happened.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they ever say exactly where everything is, but let's just pretend that, like, the two items or the two events were on the other sides of town. So maybe a lot of time passed between him going to the mower show, hanging out at the mower show, and coming back.
Mm. Yeah, and it's just such a great, like, seeing him throw the keys to the valet, like, not even thinking about anything. It's just, I love it. I love that he finally realizes, like, I know where I should be.
He also has his coach shirt on, which means I don't know that that was the most important thing for him to do at that point, but he even changed his shirt to kind of boost Peggy, if you will, because he was not wearing his, even when he pulls in, he's not wearing his coach shirt, I don't believe. So he changes in the hotel.
Do you think he always had it with him, though? Like, was it in that? Because he had, like, a bag with him.
Maybe. It probably was in that bag. Like, even in the day before when he's at the coach's circle, like, he's not even paying attention to the game. He's just watching, or he's reading through, like, the mower show brochure. So, yeah, he comes around. And then poor Bobby and Luann, they were just trying to do the right thing, but then they're in trouble for having a party.
Yeah.
Granted, I don't know why they needed that many contractors to fix what they screwed up. Like, unless they screwed up other things, like, behind the scenes that we never got to see. Like, one guy could have fixed the outlet and fixed the table and, like, cleaned the carpet in, like, 2-3 hours. Like, one handyman could have done that.
Well, I mean, I feel like they just got every specialist they could.
I guess. In that case, it would make sense, but I don't know. I still feel bad for them. They were just trying to do the right thing, but it screwed up, so whatever. I like this episode, early episode. We only have one episode left to Sirloin with Love. Do you have anything else on this one?
No, I know this is definitely, this is, like I said earlier, this is really one of my favorite episodes. I feel like it was on my, I don't know if this was, because we come, this has always been one on my list. I always like to rewatch it. It hasn't encouraged me enough to want to play Boggle. I'm very, like, not good of a speller, so Boggle's not my kind of jam. But I don't know. Maybe next time we visit each other, we play some Boggle.
I'd be for that. I can't even tell you the last time I played Boggle, but I'm down for trying that. Well, next time, like I said, we're going to be wrapping up King of the Hill, though. Apparently, when we created this list, this was the last episode of King of the Hill, but with the news, it looks like it's not going to be anymore. But we will see you all next week when we do To Sirloin with Love. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.